This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mack and Roshan Kinnison. It is 6 a.m. Thursday, the 19th of November, or as we like to call it here, Friday Junior, because we're that much closer to the weekend. And how are you doing today, Roshan?
I'm doing pretty good, Lynn, especially after you reminded me that it is, in fact, Friday Junior. I'm feeling a lot better right now.
It's still Friday tomorrow before we get to the weekend, you know. No need to get too excited.
Another one more day. But it is a Thursday. Thursday's always great. You know why? Because it's Ring Incense Day at 9:30 a.m. I know.
I'm rolling my eyes. But yes, it is a very good show. That's happening later on after the 9:30 news. What is happening today?
In fact, today is a little bit of a special one because tomorrow is Universal Children's Day. So I'll be exploring ways to teach kids about money and how to basically financially educate them. It's going to be quite an interesting conversation, I feel.
All right. But before we get to Universal Children's Day tomorrow, today is another kind of day. Today is actually World Toilet Day. And I mean, on the face of it, it doesn't sound like the most glamorous international day to be celebrating, but it's quite important because access to clean water and sanitation is one of the sustainable development goals set by the UN. And actually, a lot of people in the world still don't have access to clean water, even here in Malaysia. So we're going to be taking a look at that later on at about 7:45.
Yeah, you know, it's something that we take for granted, but it is a hallmark of civilization, right? It's especially of developing societies. I mean, people in Selangor, we know what it's like to not have water for a few days. Can you imagine not having access to proper facilities, indoor plumbing, things like that? And there are lots of societies in the world that go through something like that. And it doesn't have to be so far from KL.
Indeed. So we're going to be looking at that later on during the 7 o'clock hour during the morning brief. But in the meantime, Roshan, at about 6:30, what are we looking at?
Well, at 6:30, we take a flight around the world at all the international stories. Metaphorical flights. Flights to nowhere. we're taking a look at Pfizer's plans because they're going to file a vaccine that proves 95% effective, apparently. So a lot of vaccine news going about. And also, we're taking a look at Thailand as the parliament is to vote on the constitution as protests turn violent. So basically some updates out of Thailand. But closer to where we are in this point in time, Lynn, we're going to be taking a look at scams in about 10 minutes because news is that a ex-teacher lost about 250,000 ringgit in a phone scam in Seremban. And I noticed that a month before that, there was another phone scam in Seremban. So this is definitely something that's happening there, but it's a wider problem.
Absolutely. And if you want to weigh in on our conversations, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we're asking you, what's the key personality trait that leads to success? So stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Paper Cup by Real Estate, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Now, the story that we're looking at this morning is in CNBC Make It, and it is talking about leadership and some of the traits that certain people like Elon Musk and Bill Gates have that set them apart from everyone else. So this is kind of bouncing off the back of the fact that hedge fund billionaire Ray Dalio, he spent years studying the habits and personalities of these wealthy, successful individuals. And he's administered personality tests to them to try and determine why is it, you know, you managed to, you know, rise above the rest, metaphorically speaking. And it appears that a lot of these leaders have in common is some kind of confluence between passion and imagination and the practicality to actually turn their ideas into something tangible. It's interesting and it's quite a difficult balance to strike, right? Because you can have, I certainly know people who have boundless imagination, you know, they're bursting with ideas, but when you actually ask them to sit down and, you know, work something through or to actually implement it, it's a little bit like, you know, trying to catch a tornado in the palm of your hand.
Yeah, you know, when I look at leadership and success, I often think that leaders come in pairs. You know, you've got the business development leader and then you've got the technical leader, right? Not necessarily the same person. So if you take a look at Apple, you had Jobs and you had Woz. Jobs was the more business visionary marketing guy, and Woz was the nerd, the technician behind the technology. Same thing if you look at Bill Gates, right? Bill Gates had Paul Allen, and Warren Buffett's got Charlie Munger. There are a lot of partnerships that go into a lot of this. And, you know, towards the later years of Apple, when just before Steve Jobs died, he had Tim Cook, who was the operations chief, right? Now he's the current CEO. But see, Tim Cook was the guy who handled everything behind the scenes. And Jobs laid the groundwork for what would come ahead of them, right? So it's partnerships, it's leaders, but I like what Ray Dalio here is saying about curiosity and learning being important. But, you know, when you look at someone like Elon Musk, I don't necessarily think of him as a great leader, right? Because he's very volatile. But if you partnered him with someone who was more stable, someone who could maybe manage the chaos, then you could have that. Because genius a lot of times comes out of chaos and randomness and craziness, essentially, right? Mm. A lot of these...
Or it's what the rest of us perceive as craziness, right? These, because we can't fathom necessarily how their minds jump from A to Z.
That's it. To any normal observer of behavior, you would consider that crazy, right? Elon Musk tweeting certain things, naming his kid a certain thing, is considered certainly outside the norm. I'm not judging him for doing any of that. But there are some times where he's tweeted things that he shouldn't have tweeted out as the CEO of a public listed company. Now, all that said, that erratic behavior, while not the best for a CEO, does help churn out some of the best ideas, right? Because essentially you're throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks. And you need that kind of passion in order to drive the companies. Look at all these founder-led companies that are essentially the most valuable companies in the world right now. Whether it's Alibaba or Facebook or Apple, not led by a founder anymore, but founder started. Microsoft, for that matter. Massive companies. And all the tech companies as well. And a lot of them either were started a ground up and had a leadership team around them, or they were trying to solve their own problems, right? What I've heard termed as they were customer zero to an issue. Mm. So one company has recently come up is Fastly, which is basically a content delivery network online. And the current CEO, just when he was on the development side of things, just didn't have a product that worked for him. So he went into it, and now Fastly is worth a few billion dollars.
Yeah, I think also, you know, you picked out a point from this article that I think does also deserve more attention, which is the place of curiosity and lifelong learning, right? Because, yes, you know, we can talk about, you know, at any point in time, you should maybe try and upskill a little bit to try and keep up with the very fast-changing world that we're seeing today. But this is also, I think, you know, the role of curiosity and in the initiative to take that learning into your hands and even tackle subjects that seem on the surface of it far beyond you. That's also what some of these leaders have. You know, no matter what else you say about Elon Musk, where the practicality comes in is that when he decided he wanted to start something that was, you know, related to space exploration, he taught himself about rocket science and rocket propulsion. He didn't have a background in it. He sat down and he learned. And that is the kind of practicality that helps to translate these far-flung ideas into actual reality.
Yeah, no, I just like to round that point up a little bit by just reminding everyone that not all of us are Elon Musk, right? Not all of us are geniuses. and these are highly intelligent individuals, right? I'm not saying that we can't do the same. There are lessons to be learned from it, like curiosity and learning and excellence in our own trajectories, in our own circles. You don't have to go become a billionaire to be considered a success. You can do many, many things and be considered a success. This is how you define it and how you want to apply these different rules to your life. Maybe you need to go find a partner in crime who is either a genius or someone who can keep you in line. And in all of this, just keep learning about what you're doing, right? Even if you're creating content on social media, you are a radio producer, a radio station that we don't know about, or any of these different things, there is something to be learned from leaders. But that doesn't mean you have to benchmark yourself against them, because these are outliers. Drive yourself crazy by setting such high expectations.
Yeah, no one is expecting you to learn rocket science in the next 3 weeks of the CMCO.
I think for 99% of the population is probably unrealistic.
Yeah, but it's just, I guess, the attitude. don't adopt the attitude of saying, no, I can't do it without even trying, is I think what we're driving at. Because I've heard that a lot from many people at many different stages of life. Some will say, you know, oh, too old, can't do it. Some will say, no, I'm just not tech. I just can't do tech. It's like a wall comes down. So I do think if you make the effort, perhaps you might be able to surprise yourself. So let us know what you think. You know, how important is curiosity to success? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up for you, and then we're taking a look at scams. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Something in the Air by Thunderclap Newman, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Now, we're taking a look at a story in The Star this morning, and this is a local story, quite unfortunate. It says here, a retired teacher lost at least 250,000 ringgit in a phone scam. So this was in the state of Seremban. So the 63-year-old ex-teacher reportedly received a call, I think in early September, from someone claiming to be an old friend who'd moved to England and needed help with money for her daughter's surgery. So this person, out of the goodness of their heart, transferred money to a bank account given by the caller. And then there was a kind of a back and forth of transferring money back. Oh, wait, that's not the right amount of money. Oh, you have to pay a certain amount of penalties. And the ultimate result was that the victim transferred more than 200,000 ringgit into several accounts between the end of September to early November.
Yeah, so just to go through the back and forth, because I think it's important here. So the first transfer was the victim transferred 40,000 ringgit into the account given by the scammer. Then the scammer calls back and says, you transferred 10,000 pounds instead. And then they transfer, and then the scammer transfers back the remainder, which is about 10,000 ringgit or so. So now you've got math that's happening, that's confusing, right? What happens after this is that, no, so at this point, you assume that, okay, it's even, right? She's transferred 40,000 ringgit over. Now, the next thing that happened in this situation was the victim received an apparent call from Bank Negara saying that she had accidentally transferred 100,000 ringgit back to the victim because of it. I mean, it's a mistake anyone can make, right? And an additional zero. So these are the things that happen. And then what happens was, what happened then is that Bank Negara, this fake Bank Negara offered to help out, and then there were payments and penalties involved, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. Lynn. And then what happens is the result of the story is that she lost 200,000 ringgit. This is a very sad story, and it appears to not be the only one in Seremban, actually, because about 2 months earlier, the same state commercial crime chief, Superintendent R.B. Ghani, had also mentioned that there was another scamming case, also around 200,000 ringgit, also done over the phone. So I think it's just important to remember that, especially this year. I've done some webinars with BFM here about scams and just the proliferation of, especially on the back of cybercrime and scams this year on the back of the pandemic, because either people are desperate or people are being greedy about the returns because of low interest rates. Mm. So these are the two things. And actually, the FTC...
Those are investment scams, right?
Investment scams. Or the other way is that if you're desperate for... if you are put under pressure to act for a friend, or that you think that you're being... That some of the scams are that your account is being hacked. Why don't you transfer this to another account? So you're acting on fear. You're acting on emotion.
Yes.
So the four things to pay attention to, and this is a great graphic by the Federal Trade Commission of the US. One, pretend. If scammers, how to identify a scam. One, scammers pretend to be from an organization you know. Two, scammers say there is a problem or price. There are always mm-hmm. two solutions here that they play on your emotions. Three, and the most important one, is they try to pressure you to act immediately. This is the most important point, because they don't want you to think. They don't want you to have a moment to go and consult anyone else, because the minute you open your mouth to anyone else, you will realize it's
collapses.
A scam. And then the fourth one is scammers will tell you to pay in a specific way, a way that can bypass certain ways that are recoverable, for instance, or to protect their identities. So gift cards and Bitcoin and things like that.
And I think this is something that, you know, we hear a lot about it. And yes, it's unfortunate, but we don't believe that it can happen to us, right? Because, oh, you know, we're digitally literate. Oh, we're financially literate. But I have had friends who very, very nearly got caught in one of these phone scams. And this person, I remember it very vividly because it was happening in the office. And she used to sit behind me. And she was, you know, woman in her mid-30s. University educated, got a good job, family, and she got a call from her bank saying that some transactions had been flagged by the MACC, and so she got a shock. And so then, you know, there was a back and forth of people calling her, claiming to be from the police, from the MACC, from the bank itself. And she was on the phone panicking for half an hour until the thing that tipped her off was that someone asked for a PIN. And
there
that's
we go.
Where
that's the one.
It kind of tripped her out of the mindset. And if they hadn't done that, she probably would have gone through with it because she was calling her husband. She was she was trying to figure out what was going on. And it was frightening for her, right? And in hindsight, she thought, okay, you know, I should have noticed it earlier, but she didn't because she was afraid.
Yeah. And I think it's very important not to shame anyone who's been hit by this, right? Because it's victim shaming. Scammers are playing on their emotions, and it's very, very troubling time in that moment, right? So you want, never give out your PIN or OTP. Never do that. There are scams. There are people stealing your WhatsApp accounts because you share your OTP. These are very important things. No bank, no company is ever going to ask you for the 3-digit number on the back of your credit card, the OTP that you get sent, or your bank PIN. Never, 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 never share these details. And in fact, if people start asking you for your details, be wary. Call the number that's officially listed on the bank or the back of your credit card or whatever account information you have, instead of just listening to the person who's apparently called you. Now, there's so much more that we can cover here, but if you want to learn more about how to protect yourself, just search up Ring It and Sense on the BFM website and search up scams. And there are a few podcasts here, one from Citos Holdings where I talked to Dennis Martin about ways to protect ourselves. But also a few months earlier, when especially at the start of the pandemic, I spoke to FICO, the head of fraud, security and compliance, about scams and how we can better protect ourselves online. This is definitely something to pay attention to. Don't underestimate it.
Absolutely. And let us know what you think as well. Do you know someone who's been scammed over the phone? You can tell us, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us over at BFM Radio. We're about to head into the 6:30 news now, but first, The Other Side by Aerosmith, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Mercy by Duffy, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Kanisen. Now, we are taking a look around the world at what's been happening over on the international news front this morning and overnight. And of course, the big one has been that Pfizer is planning on filing their vaccine apparently proves 95% effective. So this is in a final analysis of their clinical trial data. So it looks like they are going to be applying for the first U.S. regulatory authorization for a coronavirus shot.
Yep, the drug maker and their partner BioNTech have said that the vaccine protects people of all ages and ethnicities with no significant safety problems so far in a trial that includes almost 44,000 participants. The update is a part of, I guess, a string of promising developments that we've seen over the last few days, including Moderna's rival shot that appears equally effective. I think initially Moderna's numbers were better than Pfizer's, but it seems to be matching them right now. And this is judging from data published earlier this week. And a third contender in all this is, of course, AstraZeneca and the University of Oxford. They're expected to release trial results soon. Of course, there's way more to talk about this, but we'll be doing a call about that in about an hour.
Yes, so later on about 7:30, we're going to be speaking with Sam Fazeli. He's a senior healthcare analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence about all of these new vaccine developments. So if you're interested, be sure to stay tuned for that later on after the 7:30 news. But in the meantime, we're also taking a look at this other story that's been happening with one of our close neighbours in the north. So Thailand's parliament has rejected a push by pro-democracy groups for a constitutional amendment in order to reduce the powers of the monarchy in the country. So this is potentially escalating what has been several months already of anti-government protests. So the parliament instead voted for setting up a charter rewriting committee that will skip any review review of chapters governing the monarchy, which is currently the most powerful institution in Thailand.
Yeah, the roadmap for amendment proposed by a rights group, which the protesters support, failed to secure enough support from the lawmakers. Now, with the parliament turning down the demand for monarchy reform, protest groups have vowed to stage mass gatherings until all their demands are met, which also includes the resignation of the current prime minister and a rewriting of the charter to make it more democratic. And, you know, Lynn, as you mentioned, this is something that we've been seeing in Thailand going on for months on end. And also, I think there are parallels to the Hong Kong demonstrations as well, mm-hmm. right? And we've seen a few of these around the world, actually. Now, the parliament decision came as thousands of anti-government activists held a rally for a second straight day in the capital of Bangkok after the most violent protest in years a day earlier left more than 50 people injured. They rallied to the police headquarters in central Bangkok on Wednesday to protest against the use of water cannons and tear gas on demonstrators. Yeah, so their response to the use of water cannons and tear gas on demonstrators was to demonstrate some more, showing, I guess, whether right or wrong, it shows that they're the passion for the cause and what they feel like they're fighting for.
Yeah, their commitment to it, right? Because honestly, I mean, you can't minimize the risk as well that demonstrators who are turning out to protest for monarchical reform, you can't minimize the risk that they face in Thailand, because Thailand's lese majeste laws are extremely fierce. And these are, you know, this is not even considering the long-held taboos in the country against speaking in any kind of negative way about the king. They risk lengthy prison sentences for calling for these reforms. So I guess we'll have to wait and see how this turns out, because it doesn't look like this is going to resolve anytime soon, what with Parliament now kind of sliding the reform of the monarchy out of the picture, even though it was the main tenet, I think, that a lot of protesters were calling for.
Yeah, and I think this spate of protests breaks that long-held taboo about publicly criticizing the royal family and questioning laws that stifle discussion of the monarchy. This is a very new for Thailand. I don't think it's ever been really, really done, especially in a way like this. And essentially, the contention, also one of the other contentions here, is that Thailand's current charter has been the point of contention here, because it's since the inception of Prayut, a former army chief took power in 2014.
Through a military coup, by the way.
Through a military coup, yes. Protesters and critics view it as an instrumental in helping the royalist establishment retain its grip on power, with Prayut returning as the leader after the 2019 elections. And the charter here, I think one of the main contentions, allows the military-appointed Senate, whose protesters once scrapped, to vote for the premier. So again, kind of a stacked against the deck system here.
It is. And this is one of the things that I think it's probably going to hurt Thailand in the very near future, because Thailand is looking to open its borders and potentially try and bring back some form of tourism, because that's one of the lifebloods of their country.
A significant part of their economy relies on tourism, for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. And tourism or tourism-related industries. And how do you do that while you are simultaneously contending with a global pandemic as well as large-scale civil unrest? It's going to be a very fine balance that Thailand will have to draw there. But right now, we are about to head into some messages, and then we're going to be taking a look at the front pages of our very own newspapers and portals. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Shout to the Top, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Kanesan. Now, we are looking at the front pages of our newspapers and portals this morning, and I think almost all of them, of the newspapers that is, have Batu Sapi somewhere on their front page. So New Straits Times is Emergency in Batu Sapi, Utusan Malaysia is Darurat di Batu Sapi. I think that's also what's on kind of more or less on the front page of the
every
Star.
Single newspaper. Every it's on the front one. Of every newspaper. The Star is polls on hold as King agrees to emergency in Batu Sapi. And if you look at the Malaysian Reserve has gone with a slight deviation here. Their main headline is theme parks and FECs, which is FECs are family entertainment centres bleeding $500 million in 2 months. And then below that, Agong declares Batu Sapi emergency, cancels by election. So they're the only ones who I think went with a sidebar on this this headline. Mm-hmm. But this is the biggest story today, I think. One of the biggest anyway. This was, I think, declared last night. The Prime Minister went on air to kind of, went live on air to kind of talk us through this, because, you know, the word emergency comes with a lot of connotations such as military intervention, attention and things like that. And he went on to, I think, went on to great strides to emphasize that this was not the case. And the only reason this was coming into play was to hold off the by-election because they didn't want a repeat of Sabah, the Sabah state elections. Because even though there are SOPs, and that he's quoted in The Star saying this, that even though there are SOPs, compliance is very poor and that could lead to much bigger issues.
And I think what the CEO Morning Brief points out as well here is the fact that of the voting constituency in Batu Sapi, almost 10% have addresses that reside outside of the constituency. So they would actually have to travel back in order to cast their vote. So, and that obviously, you know, in the wake of the wider Sabah state elections, that's not something that anyone is particularly keen about at this point in time. Still, I think we'll just have to wait and see how this develops, as well as what's going to happen in Gurik, because the Gurik MP has also unfortunately passed away quite recently. So, you know, our condolences to his family as well. But then it does raise more questions of what's going to happen with his seat.
Yeah, and then I think what was initially proposed, and this was, I think, some bipartisan support. Oh, sorry, Malaysia, we shouldn't be saying bipartisan. We have multiple parties all vying for in
I think
parliament.
It's bipartisan, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, for lack of a better word. So basically, multi-partisan view here was we had some support for walkover elections, I think, when when the Batu Sapi seat first opened up. And again, there's been called upon when the Gurik MP passed. I think Lim Guaning re-brought that up. Now, a few other issues here, I think, were the fact that the Election Commission was facing some troubles in terms of getting people to work, getting election workers, because no one wanted to work. No one wanted to go to Sabah. They only managed to get 17% of the needed 837 workers needed for a by-election. And then, of course, as you mentioned, Lynn, there were also you couldn't impose things like border control around the Batu Sapi area because there were people outside of Batu Sapi who vote in Batu Sapi. And Parti Warisan Sabah also accepted the decision and hopes that I think it will be immediately after the COVID-19 outbreak is brought under control.
Yeah, so what else do we also have in the newspapers this morning, Roshan?
I actually do want to highlight the other headline I read on the Malaysian Reserve, theme parks and FEC's bleeding $500 million in 2 months. So we talk a lot about industries on the Morning Run, taking a look at all the different ways they've been impacted. And these are some big things, right? Because it's an estimated $520 million that these guys have lost over the last 2 months between October and November. That's just October and November, by the way. $2 million. Some are bleeding $2 million a month. Some $1 million a month. And because you know these leisure centres can't get visitors, families aren't going to theme parks and things like that. And on this note, actually, Lynn, you've got an interesting conversation with Aquaria tomorrow on the Breakfast Grill, don't you?
Yes, I do. So that's in conjunction with Universal Children's Day, which is tomorrow, and I'll be speaking with Daryl Fong. He's the executive director of Aquawalk Group, which is the parent company of Aquaria KLCC. He's also general manager of Aquaria KLCC. And we're going to be talking about the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on their operations, you know, their visitor numbers, as well as, you know, some of their existing plans and whether or not they've been really upended by the pandemic. Because before, a couple of years ago, Aquawalk did announce that they were potentially looking to list by 2020. And obviously 2020 rolled around with the pandemic in store, and that's probably not going to happen.
Yes, the pandemic may have accelerated some listings, but it's definitely delayed a lot of others.
Yes, indeed. So that's going to happen tomorrow after the 8 o'clock news, so be sure to stay tuned. And I think if we take a look at the CEO Morning Brief as well this morning, aside from the Batu Sapi emergency, which is in a little table on their front page, they also have PAC to probe discrepancies in 5 billion ringgit MINDEF land swaps, AES, as well as One Bestari Net. So that's a very interesting article as well, continued on page 4 of the CEO Morning Brief. And we are about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin right now, though, and then we're bringing you more business news and analysis during the Morning Brief that follows. But right now, some music. Here is Suddenly You Love Me by The Tremolos, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.